Welcome to the Besties with Breasties podcast. Sarah Hall here. I am a certified health and wellness coach, athletic trainer, mom, and breast cancer survivor. I help women overcome their own mind drama to make mind shifts that open up the possibility for their most empowered and energetic life.
And I am Beth Wilmus, author, speaker, and founder of a human investment organization, otherwise known as a nonprofit, called Faith Through Fire. Our mission is to reduce the fear and anxiety that breast cancer patients feel and replace it with hope and a path toward thriving.
This podcast is about our experiences with breast cancer
and life after as young survivors and moms.
The things that we just get excited about. I literally have butterflies now. I'm so
about organization. About organization. Yeah. Oh my gosh. You ain't right.
I am okay with that.
Yeah. I love it that you and Anna love organization so much.
Yeah.
I stay organized because I have to. Like, you know, I have to stay organized to get things done. You guys get enjoyment from organization.
Well, I think, and I'm thinking through, why do I enjoy this so much? It's like, if we were to get like railroaded, like somehow all of a sudden something was really unexpected, that I feel so confident that like, oh, well, we're ahead. And like, you know, we're so planned out. We're great.
You're super organized, except for one thing, Sarah.
Oh, God. Now I'm worried.
Our standard operating procedure manual.
Oh, I know. That's because things change. And I feel like I make it and then I have to change it again.
People have no context for what we're talking about. We have a call every single Monday between Sarah, Anna, and I just to kind of make sure everybody's on the same page and to make sure that no balls were dropped. For the nonprofit. I could hear the glee in Anna's voice as she was talking about how she had organized a certain portion of our CRM. And I was just like chuckling because I'm like, you two get so excited when you organize something.
Yeah.
And for me, it's just all about efficiency. Like, we have to have this because we need to be able to refer to it. And so we know, you know, kind of where our place is.
You're always like, if we get hit by a train.
Yeah, there's
so many trains out there in your mind.
There's so many trains in my mind. I'm always saying to them, when we get hit by a train. Not when.
Yeah.
If we get hit by a train, we want somebody to come into the nonprofit and be able to pick up the pieces.
Which is super smart. And I find it not as important because I feel like it's hard to put down on paper what's happening when I'm constantly juggling all the balls. Like,
yes.
I'm just trying to stay up with, I'm trying not to drop a ball and you want me to tell people how I'm doing it.
Right. Well, so that's,
I don't know. The balls keep changing.
That's nonprofit work. It's like, oh my gosh. But I have this standard operating procedure, or as I call it, our SOP, and it has every procedure for every facet of the organization in it. Sarah is on the operations side, so she's constantly creating these new processes and then tweaking them. So I get your point, because it's like, as soon as you write a standard operating procedure and then we change it,
I would
argue that it's easier to edit than it is to revise, but
totally.
Or to start the whole
thing. Someday, and I guess this is where I'm like, someday when we get to this place, the tweaks will be so small that it's like, I wouldn't be rewriting an entire chapter. Sure. I would just be like changing a bullet point,
right?
You know?
But you know what it's like? It's like keeping up with like maintenance on your house. If you don't do it as you go along, all of a sudden it's overwhelming and it costs too much.
You have a forest in your backyard.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I digress. We are way off topic.
That's a nice banter.
Way off topic. We're actually, can you believe it? We are at the end of our medical skepticism series.
This went so much longer than
so
I thought.
So much longer than we thought it was going to.
We kept meeting people that would be a great story, or like reading a new book that would be a great interview. And it was funny because it almost became comical. You're like, so I have another interview for medical skepticism. And I'm like, I mean,
sure.
No surprise there.
I mean, like, we just tied up the an interview. I met her yesterday.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, I have to share your story.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, so we're going to kind of summarize everything. So we're going to talk today about the challenges of navigating medical information.
And then our impressions from what we learned.
Yeah. And maybe just land on the impact of skepticism on patient care.
But before we do that, let's hear from our first sponsor.
Ann's Bra Shop features skilled mastectomy fitters ready to assist you in selecting the perfect breast forms, bras, swimsuits, and camisoles for your post-surgery needs. They have three locations in the St. Louis area, Chesterfield in Wentzville, Missouri, across the river in O'Fallon, Illinois, and a fourth location south on I-55 in Cape Girardeau. Visit Ann's Bra Shop at www.brashop.com to learn more. Okay, and we're back. Can we just talk about the challenges of navigating everything we heard?
Yeah. I mean, because it's like one person says one thing and another person says a different thing, and then you're just sort of left in this place like, well, I don't know what to do.
Yeah,
now.
And some of it's anecdotal, yeah. Right? It's some of it's patient experience, some of it's scientific information. Yeah. This scientist doesn't agree with this scientist, and this patient doesn't agree with this, and it's just like by the end of it, your brain is exhausted,
swimming.
Yeah, and it's frustrating for patients because they are in search of information, and mm-hmm. so it's just like I really sympathize with the.
Yeah,
I mean it's information overload.
Yeah,
I think the alternative would be not to explore it. Which I don't think is feasible either.
Yeah. Well, people can get paralyzed in the overwhelm. Life is already overwhelming, and now you're going to explore, you know, what you can implement to reduce recurrence or to be healthier or whatever. And when you sort of start diving into it, you're just like paralyzed by the amount that's out there. So
there's also like a lot of complexity to like some of the things mm-hmm. that we learned. Like it's not a layperson's language.
Yeah.
So when you hear this stuff, I think it can be a little bit hard to decipher it and what it means. I mean, I feel like these scientists in particular, like these PhDs, they have their own language.
Yeah. Do you think it's better, though, to take action, like to just move forward and take an action? Or would it be better to take no action?
Well, I mean, I think you and I are always going to be on the part of taking action as long as it's not going to hurt you.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's. I don't know. I want to talk about kind of like...
Oh, and I like your point here of accessibility. I definitely want to speak to that.
In terms of what? Accessibility. I did write that point, but I'm curious what that means to you.
Well, because for me, sometimes when I hear, like I was even having a conversation with one of our beneficiaries this weekend, and she was sort of telling me all the things that she's been implementing since treatment. And for many, and she's going, I'm worried because I put all these things in place and I feel good about it. But she's like, I've been taking a break from work. And once I go back into work, how am I going to continue what I was doing and then also be working? Just that's going to stretch her time thin, and then it already stretches your finances thin. And I think for some people, when you're here, like eat organic, go try to get a sweat in, get movement in. That means join a gym. Like sometimes it can sort of mean dollar signs. Sometimes it can mean like it's a really big stress on your time. So accessibility, I mean, I think when you think of that, like I think of many things that you add in cost a lot of money or cost a lot of time.
You took accessibility to a different place than I was thinking of it. I was thinking of it as like there's not a lot of attention given to things outside the quote-unquote standard of care.
Gotcha.
So, like, I don't think a lot of patients knew, for example, before we did this series, about fasting mimicking diets.
Sure.
Or, you know what I mean? Or cancer as a metabolic versus genetic disease.
Yeah.
You're not going to get that when you Google it. You're not going to get it if you look up the American Cancer Society or, you know, one of those other big organizations. Like, you will not see that.
Yeah.
And so, for me, accessibility is... That what appealed to me about this medical skepticism series is let's talk about the things that maybe A, nobody's ever talking about, or B, just validating patient stories, because we had a lot of patient stories too.
Yeah, and just knowing what's to be trusted and what's not.
I mean, that's the problem with medical skepticism is that you don't know.
Yeah.
And I don't know that you and I can definitively say this is, we have our impressions, right, which we're going to get into.
Yeah.
Before we do that, before we kind of talk about our impressions and what stood out to us in the series, do you want to do Boobs in the News?
Let's do it.
Okay. Boobs in the News is a fun segment where we read funny tweets by real people or ridiculous news stories.
Boobs in the News! Boobs in the News! Boobs in the News!
This is odd news. You ready?
Uh-huh.
Odd news. Man balances running lawnmower on his chin for 9 minutes.
No.
9 minutes and 17 seconds.
This has bad news bears written all over it.
It says... This is on April 15th. So it says, an Idaho man balanced a running lawnmower on his chin for 9 minutes, 17 seconds to break the Guinness World Record. I love that there's a record for this. Yeah,
wait. How do you know this is something that you would like to work for?
That's what I'm saying. And he practiced for this. David Rush, who is on a quest to hold the most concurrent Guinness World Records titles, I cannot speak today, previously attempted the record about four years ago, but his time of 3 minutes 52 seconds was disqualified because his lawnmower did not have a bag on it.
Wow.
Why didn't they tell him before he got started?
Yeah.
That's mean.
Or maybe he was just like, I'm going to give this a try.
Okay.
And then he did
And in the meantime, the record was increased to 7 minutes, 2 seconds by a fellow serial record breaker. So this guy does it. He gets disqualified. And in the meantime, somebody else breaks the record.
Why are there records like this?
I know.
This is why.
Okay. So here's the thing. Okay. It says the record brought Russia's total concurrent titles to 165. This is what they're doing.
Oh, they're going to look up something
silly. They look up the records and they are like, I'm going to break that. And then it becomes a hobby for them.
Yeah.
That is interesting.
I can think of about a million other hobbies.
I know. A million other ways to use your time. But here's the argument I'm going to make as to why this man is not a boob.
So not a boob?
He's not a boob.
Putting a running lawnmower on your chin? How is this not like just chopped his body up?
Because he's doing it by the handle, you goober. He's got the handle on his chin, not the actual blades.
Oh. I'm like thinking he's got like the wheel on his chin.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I can look up the video. They have a video here, but my guess is that it's the handle and it just happens to be running.
But that would be hard because then the heavy part is on top.
I mean, you don't think that's the case? I mean, okay, folks, we are going to look into this.
I know.
We're going to like figure it out.
Wow.
Here's why I'm going to say he's not a boob. I have been doing research lately and this might fit in nicely with our recurrence series that we're going into, preventing recurrence or disease progression. We as a society have lost the ability to play.
Yeah.
And play is defined as something you do for pure amusement, has no purpose other than it's just fun for you.
Gosh, and I struggle with this.
I know. And I think make a note.
Everything has a purpose.
Make a note because we'll do an episode on play. But I take notice when I see grown adults doing ridiculous things. And I think this guy is not a boob because he is participating in play. That's my stance. Okay.
Gosh, it's a dangerous play, but sure.
I mean, you know, there's people that skydive and do all kinds of things.
Yeah, that's true.
This man just has a.
And mom. I venture to think that he's also not necessarily doing it because he's always wanted to balance a lawnmower, but it's about the notoriety of breaking another record.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I think it's funny that this has become his obsession. I want to interview his loved ones and be like, is this super annoying to live with? Like, hey, Val, I'm going out. I got to work on my lawnmower skills.
Like, she's like, we do the yard while you're out there.
Right. You know that he's making somebody annoyed like by doing all this effort on these things.
Yeah, that's silly. Yeah.
It's play, Sarah.
It is play.
It's play.
My husband is actually much better at play.
Yeah.
My brain is always just like, I have free moments instead of doing something like that's purely, even in the moments where I'm like, this is self-care, I'm thinking this is something for me and this is what the benefit and this is what I'm getting out of it.
So
maybe I should change my brain to be like, I have a moment I should engage in play where it's like the goal is to just play.
So do you not have anything like that currently?
I mean, that I think that I just, you know what? Okay, this is going to sound so silly. The thing that I love to do, I'm going to sound like such a nerd. I almost don't even want to share it. But I'm going to now be the boob.
What?
I love to put on music and clean my house, but in a very specific way.
That's not play.
I know this is not going to sound like play, but like, I like to, this is why I'm going to sound like a nerd. I don't even want to say it.
Say it. Now you've gone down this rabbit hole. You have to say it.
Okay. I like to sort of let my ADD take over.
Okay.
And then like I always start in the laundry room. And then if I see something in the laundry room that should go somewhere else, I take it somewhere else. And then I end up letting myself get distracted by whatever is in that room that needs to get done too. And then.
So you just go room to room based on the item is.
I don't necessarily get like, but I allow it to happen. So I'm just like, this is what I'm doing. And this is why I'm letting myself do it because it's like an outlet for my distraction.
That's not play.
But it is because I just let my brain do what it wants to do. And so much of the time I'm having to be like, you are going to focus on marketing efforts right now. And I need you to stay focused on this. And I have to rein it in all the time. But instead, I just let my brain be like, you know,
that
you
feels
can
more
do
like,
this right
That feels
now.
More like self-care to me. But I will let our listeners weigh in on this if that's play in Sarah's world. Let me tell you what play is for me.
Okay, great. Let's hear it.
Because it's the right way. So my youngest is 9, Charlotte, and we have a routine that we do pretty often where we put Disco Inferno, the song Disco Inferno on the Alexa, and we dance to it together in the living room before school.
Oh.
And we do a lot of like, you know, 70s moves. We do a lot of hand slapping. We do a lot of like Despicable Me moves. You know how he dances?
Yeah.
And it's completely ridiculous. And everybody in the house just laughs at us and rolls their eyes. They won't participate because they feel stupid. But Charlotte and I have a dance party and it serves no purpose other than it puts us both in a good move.
Yeah.
I will tell you that that is the longest song in the world. I am literally...
By the end, you're just like, I'm out of breath.
I'm out of breath by the end of it because it goes on and on and on. Yeah. It's like almost as bad as American Pie.
Oh my gosh.
Like it goes on forever. Yeah. So like that to me is like...
Play.
Yeah. So I'm giving this guy credit. I'm saying you do you, boo. I don't know. You
play
guys...
Play with your running lawnmower.
You guys can weigh in on if Sarah's like interesting way of cleaning is play. I feel like I'm shaming you.
You're not shaming me. I don't feel bad about it. I'm just thinking like how I think play to me would be like, how does your brain feel after? And if your brain feels like free and open and good, then you've accomplished play.
Okay.
And that's how my brain feels after my ADHD clean.
I feel like the next time you and I work together face to face, we're doing a little disco inferno is what I think.
I'm down with that.
I know.
I'm open to other people's play methods.
Will you play with me, Sarah?
You can play with me.
I'll play with you.
ADD clean.
Okay. Great. Oh, yeah. That's right. We'll do Disco Inferno and then I'll help you clean in a very weird way. All right. There's your bibs.
Bibs in the news. Bibs in the news. Bibs in the news.
Okay. So let's talk. We're back. Let's talk about our impressions and what stood out to us in the series. I kind of have what I thought was super interesting. Do you have anything that stood out to you? Or you want me to go first?
I want you to go first because I feel like I can synthesize what you say better. And then I will sort of like summarize my whole feelings on this in general.
Okay. Well, I thought there were a couple things that stood out to me that I thought was interesting. One is that cancer treatment today focuses on, you know, dividing cells and removing tumors, but it's not addressing cancer stem cells, which is ultimately responsible for metastasis. I didn't realize that.
I didn't either. That was a new learning for me and very eye-opening.
Very eye-opening. So that's not even a medical skepticism thing. That's like just reality.
Right.
I find that really interesting that current cancer care doesn't address that.
Yeah.
And so I would argue that the lifestyle modifications that you and I advocate for are even more critical.
Yeah.
So that was interesting to me. I also thought that it's super interesting, this concept of cancer as a metabolic disease and how little is being done about that in the current cancer care system.
But like the perspective of what it would take to make changes in that direction or even make adaptations in that direction.
It would be adaptations.
It's so like that thought was like sort of mind boggling to me and overwhelming, but I thought it was interesting. So, yeah.
I mean, we've talked to medical, you know, oncologists who are like, no, we're not incorporating any of these concepts into current cancer care. And then that leaves it to the patient to A, know about them, B, to try to do it on their own, which is really difficult.
Right. That's a huge hurdle.
Yeah.
But even the ones that I feel like are sort of,
I feel like that's a
know
miss.
About it and are interested in it. I think that they are skeptical in reverse that people would actually adopt it. I mean, just think about the Walter Longo interview where he was like, we had this theory about cancer patients, people in treatment doing a 5-day fast. And he was like, they just wouldn't do it.
Sure.
And so I think that that same thing could be applied to, you know, here we're going to tell you about these lifestyle modifications and people just being like, no,
it's too hard.
It's too hard. It's a lot easier for me to come in here. You do the treatment to me and then my body will do whatever work it's going
to
do.
It's that trauma response of helplessness, though, right? Like, I can do nothing to help myself. It's like, I just have to do the chemo and radiation and hope for the best. And it's like, I mean, I don't know. I feel like, again, that's the miss on the doctor's part. They could be going to patients and saying, hey, there's some interesting research out there saying caloric restriction could help make your chemo work better.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to try this? They're too scared to do it.
Yeah.
They have their protocols.
And it's hard. It is not easy.
You know, that leads me to my next point. The fact that oncologists are employed by hospitals where protocols are mandated by the FDA, that leaves them very little room to try new or novel approaches.
Uh-huh.
That goes back to that whole MD versus PhD, you know, thing that we saw. And I think that's a miss. I think that's, you know, if it's not going to hurt the patient Why not incorporate some of these things and see how your patients do?
Right.
They just don't operate in a system that allows for that a lot of times.
Even if they gave them, like, I mean, it could be as simple as them compiling the information, giving it to their patients in a booklet. Like, here are some alternative things that might make treatment better for you. You can take or leave whatever of this, like, feels like it lands appropriately. And then now you've not only empowered the patient, but, like,
they'll never do it.
I know.
They'll never do it. It's kind of like, you know, the other thing that I thought was really interesting is some of our guests shed light on the fact that there's a lot of generic drugs out there that have shown to be, you know, to have anti-cancer effects.
The off-label uses?
Yeah, off-label uses. And none of those are really being incorporated.
Mm-hmm. So the Pepcid, what's the Pepcid and something else? Is it Pepcid?
I don't think it was Pepcid.
No, it was...
Pepcid's an antacid, and those
are
not good.
There was one for...
There were statins.
No, I know there was a statins one, but I feel like I remember when I was going through it, somebody was like, if you... I don't remember what it was for. It was an allergy medication and something else.
Oh, Claritin?
Claritin and what?
For the bone pain.
For bone pain, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's an off-label use.
Yeah, but that's the only drug that they offer. Like the statins for lowering cancer recurrence or disease progression. Some of these other drugs have been on the market forever. Even like we've had scientists say that the dewormers like actually seem to do something.
Yeah.
And we've heard anecdotally from patients that they take them on their own.
Yeah.
And they feel like it works to slow the progression of their disease, which is usually the people that are on dewormers are stage four patients who feel like they don't, you know, why not?
They have no other options.
Why not? Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting that that's not a conversation being had, you know, and doctors, I think, are just too scared to actually practice medicine or they're restricted by the system and they can't.
Yeah.
I will say this, that my impressions from talking to these patients is that most patients who try to go natural fail. But my impression is not that you can't have success with natural treatments. I think it's that people try a little something, they dabble.
Uh-huh.
And then they go to something else and they dabble and they go to something else and they dabble and they don't have a
full lifestyle modification
or like a protocol that they feel is scientifically based. It seems like the people who have had the most success with natural healing is people who do a ton of scientific research.
Yeah.
And it's really trial and error for them. They kind of play around, but then they stick to a very strict protocol.
Yeah.
And I think and that would be very, very hard for the average patient to do without a doctor overseeing it. And no doctor is going to oversee that.
And it takes a lot of bravery for you also, especially if you're sort of in the stage four sphere, is that you've got to try something, see if it works. Like first you have to take the time to try something, see if it works, and then like do scans or whatever, see how you feel. And you might not be having like a lot of time to see if that stuff works. But I mean, this is how I feel about lifestyle modifications in general is that, and maybe this will probably come up and you ask my thoughts about the whole series in general. I think that to feel good or to feel like you're doing something that works, like it does take a lot of radical self-study. Like you implement something and whether that's like fasting like Walter Longo talked about or whether that's implementing, you know, a metabolic approach to cancer or whatever you're implementing, you really do have to...
You have to commit.
You have to commit. And I know like we sort of had back-to-back episodes and this was like the moment for me when we were doing the medical skepticism series that we interviewed we interviewed Dr. Seyfried and he said he was like all about ketosis and putting yourself into this ketosis state. And then like the next episode, we interviewed Chris Work and with Chris Beat Cancer. And he's talking about
keto doesn't work.
But he was like, referring you need a plant-based everything.
But he was referring to keto as in the modern interpretation of keto, whereas Seyfried was saying ketosis is anything that gets your body into that GKI.
Right.
And I think that's what
was confusing.
But I
think it can be overwhelming to sort of synthesize all that information because you're just like, well, which one is right for me? And I think that from a patient perspective, one, you have to learn so much about the body, but then you have to just try it.
Mm-hmm. And which sounds terrifying.
What works for you and see what you can fit into your lifestyle. And like, and you're really, you know, you're rolling the dice to take a gamble, but you're also doing the same thing with medicine. Like, I mean, the same reason that medicine works for some people and doesn't work for other people. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that I will say that's another thing that really kind of stuck in my crawl a little bit is that doctors are not following patients beyond 5 years to see like side effects of the current standard of care.
Yeah.
We have noticed a trend lately where doctors seem to be recommending less treatment, which I think is really interesting because I'm like,
well, Did you just send that? There was a new article saying that, like, they're thinking low-dose chemo is actually more effective than...
I saw that. I
like,
saw, well,
blasting
you,
somebody.
I mean,
so,
you were on that train way before that article showed up.
I was before the trend.
Yeah, you were. You were before the trend. And now these mainstream news outlets are reporting out. And I've been sending Sarah a slew of articles that I found really interesting. And one of them was talking about how low-dose chemo seems to work better. And I think Jane McClellan, who we interviewed, said the same thing.
Yeah.
That... lower doses of chemotherapy, because the thing that I thought was really interesting about our interview with Jane is that she's not anti, like, standard of care, and she's not anti alternative medicine. She's about combining both.
Right.
And she, I think, was the one that was talking about the efficacy of statins and a bunch of other things. And she's like, why wouldn't you do both? You know, we've made all these great advancements in medicine, but then you also have all these, you know, things that have been shown to be anti-cancer effects. And so where was I going with that, though? Was I think she was the one that said that low doses of chemotherapy have been shown to be more effective than the higher doses. And I thought, you know, that, and then that article came out and I was like, well, there it is. You know, I do
follow us, people. We on the cutting edge.
I mean, I do feel, I mean, hopefully people are taking note.
Yeah.
Because I do think that it's a very archaic system reliant on the FDA, which takes years and years.
I just think it was a trend and maybe part of the culture for a long time that it was just like, keep people alive, like, was their mantra.
For 5 years,
though. And so they were throwing the book at people.
For 5 years.
Right. And now I think that that just speaks to the advances of people speaking up about, like, hey, my quality of life is suffering. And I'd, you know, like, the people leaving who are going to choose, like, choose dewormers or choosing these alternative routes, like, they're like, well, we are either going to have to pivot or people are going, like, this is going to continue.
Yeah. So I mean, we hear that a lot from patients, like, well, I have to try something because the current system doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Right.
So yeah, I thought that was really interesting. Let's kind of talk about how we think the impact of skepticism on patient care. Like, but before we do that, you want to do second sponsor?
Let's do it. Thrivent is a proud sponsor of Faith Through Fire. Thrivent believes money is a tool and not a goal. The Gateway Financial Group with Thrivent is local to the St. Louis area and can work with you to create a financial strategy that reflects your priorities and helps you protect the things that matter to you, like family and giving back. Please call 314-783-4214 to schedule a free consultation with one of Thrivent's Gateway Financial Advisors.
Okay. And we're back. So let's talk about medical skepticism and how it's impacting. It's not even cancer care. It's healthcare in general. I think it's fair to say that COVID made things 10 times worse. Don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, I mean, I was just in the ER this last weekend, not for something personal, but, like, I know that I walk in a little bit on guard, you know, like, and I think that.
I mean,
that hurts the relationship from the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I have my kid's pediatrician call up and they're like, are you going to get your flu shots for your kids? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm undecided.
Now? We're going into the summer.
No, this was like.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Like, yeah. But they were calling to, like, say, you know.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, are you going to get your kids the flu shot? And I had gotten the kids flu shots and myself flu shots every year for, like, my entire life.
Uh-huh.
And I was just like, eh, I don't know. Yeah. I'm like, I'm not really feeling convinced that I need it. And that comes from, I mean, for me personally, I can only speak for myself.
Yeah, right.
But that comes from the whole COVID debacle. I'm like, you have lost my trust.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah,
I'm not going to say that I feel the same way about, you know, vaccines for polio or, you know, things like that. But I was just like, you know,
it just
really plants a seed that you can't trust who you thought you could trust.
Yeah.
And so I think COVID made medical distrust way worse. I found this article that said 72% of Americans believe federal public health institutions play a pivotal role in the nation's healthcare system, but fewer than 40% of people trust these agencies to fulfill their obligation.
Huh.
So that was the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, which I think is pretty reputable.
Mm-hmm.
Reputable. Boy, today is tough. And Harvard. I think the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. So, I mean, that's a reputable source.
Yeah.
40% of people. Like, 72 think it's like that they're in charge of healthcare, 40% trust them to do it. And just 37% of Americans have a, quote, great deal or quite a lot of trust in the National Institutes of Health, the NIH and the FDA, while only 33% hold the Department of Health and Human Services in such high esteem. I mean, they stepped in it. That's in my opinion, they stepped in it. There's going to have to be some serious counseling.
We're going to have some relationship
counseling.
There's
going to have to be some serious counseling. I think what's really going to have to happen is they're going to have to admit they got it wrong and that they strayed. and ask for forgiveness for people to ever consider coming back. What I think would be a huge mistake is if they keep going down this line of thought of you're just too stupid to know better.
Yeah.
I will say, like, I felt like people sharing their stories of getting misdiagnosed stage four, of having mastectomies they didn't need, of getting their thyroids taken out when they didn't have cancer. I mean, or even Alan. I mean, Alan, they wanted to remove his entire face.
Yeah.
And I don't know if what he's doing in Mexico is going to do anything for him. Right. I mean, I don't
know. But he's happier.
It was the right choice for him.
Right,
because
exactly.
Because his doctor was recommending that, and it was not going to give him any kind of significant gains.
Yeah.
And it's like, but there would have been lots of people who would have been so scared they would have done it for the chance, the sliver of a chance.
Yeah. All people want is hope.
Right.
Yeah.
And Alan asked the hard question, if I do this, I'll live? And the answer was, oh, no. You might get a little more time.
Right.
And, you know, the thing that I was impressed about that was he was like, I'm taking my ball and I'm going to play elsewhere. And what it is what it is. He seems like he's very confident in what his approach is.
Yeah.
And he's willing to go down the gauntlet with it. Yeah.
It takes vulnerability to ask the, like, the hard questions in the moment, especially when you have a healthcare professional who went to school and has the knowledge and they're giving you their best opinion. And then sometimes they sort of fear you into it. And then for you to still say, I would like to make a different decision, or I've got other questions, I'd like to take time about it. And like, and I know for many of them, it's like that gets very, very difficult. I mean, I've been in that situation too. Just to be able to pump the brakes and be able to make a decision that feels right for you.
I think it's really tough because doctors don't want to be in the position to extinguish all hope.
Yeah.
And patients will get mad if they try to do that.
Uh-huh.
And at the same time, they're withholding the reals of what your options are or what treatment's going to do.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, somebody said it in one of the podcasts, like if you asked your doctor, like, okay, you want to do surgery, chemo and radiation. Great. What do we do about the stem cells? And the doctor's like, oh, you know about that? And then the answer was, well, there's nothing we can really do. And it's like, okay, well, that's kind of what's responsible for metastasis. So,
right. Yeah.
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 I just think it's interesting. I don't know. I'd be curious, like, do you have any final thoughts about our medical skepticism series or like what we want people to know about it?
No.
I think we wanted to give a voice.
Yeah. Yeah.
We hear it all the time. Yeah. And nobody seems to validate people's worries, concerns, experiences.
Yeah. No. I mean, other than just what we always say is just feel like do what's right for you. Listen to your gut. You know, you did it recently with the decision about a surgery that you have, you know, that was placed on the table. Oh, just listening to your gut and like.
Yeah, I won't go into the details now. I'll tell you my saga like down the road when hopefully it's resolved.
But give it time. Give it 24 hours is not going to hurt you.
So I will tell you this story. This is really interesting. So I really liked the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Very charismatic, very thorough. I liked him. And he was like, you need this surgery. It's, you know, not a great surgery.
But he did also say like, you got time.
Well, so he won my respect because he said, you know, I don't think it's going to get better unless you have the surgery, but you have time. It's not going to get worse. If you want to wait, you don't have to do this right away, which I immediately liked him when he said that.
Mm-hmm.
But I will note, I was on the books to have the surgery before I left the office. So I was like, I mean, I respected the fact that he said I didn't have to. And then he said, well, just let's put you on the schedule and you can always cancel.
Yeah.
Which I thought, good for you, hospital. You've trained them right, right?
Yeah.
Don't let them leave before they're scheduled for their next procedure.
Sure.
And I was like, the idea of resolving this issue, which has been bothering me now for a year and a half, is really appealing. I just want to get on with my life. I just want to move on. And so at first I thought, yes, he's promising this won't get any worse and he can fix this situation for me. I'm doing this. And then the more I sat with it, the more I'm like, uh-uh. Like, I don't feel like this is like a quick, I don't feel like this is going to be the quick fix that I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to give yourself more time and space to really digest, even if it means you don't get what you want right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would be my encouragement to people is that somebody.
Yeah, some of the reasons you were like, it would be nice to have this done before I go boating this summer, or it would be nice so that I'm not dealing with the, like recovery while I'm trying to camp with my kids and enjoy my summer.
Yeah.
Like, that's not always necessarily the reason to make a decision.
No.
You know?
No, I just want it to be over. You know, I'm 8 years post-diagnosis. I'm still dealing with stuff. I just want to move on with my life. And it's really hard to pump the brakes and say, I'm going to give this more time and thought just because you want the easy win. But we've seen enough and I've seen enough to know that just because they say it's possible doesn't mean it'll happen.
Right.
So, I think I do. I will say that's another takeaway I took from this medical skepticism series is that you do have more time to think through things than you think you do. So if there's one encouragement, I would just say, if you're a research person, research, research, research. And if you're somebody that's like me, that's avoidance prone because you're scared and because you don't want to, you don't want to look at something scary until it's your situation. I feel you. I am the same exact way.
Look what's under the hood, even if the hood is smoking.
I think the key is, I wish I would have looked under the hood a little bit more. I think the key is, if you can't do it, get somebody else to advocate on your behalf. Mm-hmm. I think that would have been helpful for me. Mm-hmm. But as far as medical skepticism, I think we just hope you guys feel validated and that it gives you some thoughts that maybe you didn't otherwise consider.
Yeah.
But ultimately,
that's that.
That's that.
That's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
I'm sure we're going to meet somebody tomorrow that we're going to wish we would have shared their story.
I mean, we'll find another place to plug them in.
Yeah.
People's stories are so dynamic. I feel like they could fit in multiple categories for this podcast. All right. We're on to our next series, which is what?
Preventing recurrence.
Or disease progression. Until next time, guys.
See ya.
Bye. Thank you for being a listener of the Besties with Breasties podcast. If this podcast had a positive impact on your journey, leave us a review or consider becoming a supporter. You can donate with the link in the show notes or at faiththroughfire.org. This episode was hosted by Sarah Hall and Beth Wilmes, audio and production edits by Innovative Frequencies.